Repair Show, starring Jim Babka. Maybe your mother told you never talk politics and religion in polite company. Well, Jim Babka's mother never told him that. So come on, enjoy the forbidden pleasure. You can participate in the conversation at 1-800-259-9231. Today's show is sponsored by Gun Owners of America, gunowners.org. And now, here's Jim.
I don't know, you know, the news has been full of just awful bad news lately, and I gotta tell you, I'm fine and glad to be here with you on this Sunday for another edition of the Culture Repair Show. And once again, before we get into anything, I am willing to bribe you. I mean, an outright bribe to call the show. 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. I'm offering to give away some of my CDs, Why Conservative Christians Are Reevaluating George W. Bush, The Surprising Insights More and More Christians Are Having, and No, They're Not Deciding to Vote Democrat. It's about a 50-minute CD, and I'm offering to give it away to you if you call on the show today and you participate in the conversation, or if you email me. Of course, if you email me, I need your address and so forth. And the email address is comments@downsizedc.org. That's comments, plural, comments@downsizedc.org. And the reason we use downsizedc.org is because I'm the president of the Downsized DC Foundation and downsizedc.org Incorporated. And we give you the opportunity at downsizedc.org to lobby Congress to make government smaller. You as a citizen, to get your 2 cents in, to get them to stop spending all the money that they spend. And so that's what downsizedc.org is about, and that's my day job. That's what I do here. But, you know, the news here has been very heavy. It's been very bleak. We've had catastrophe after catastrophe, bad news upon bad news. 40,000 people are saying are going to be dead in Pakistan. We had a tsunami, right to begin, almost just right before the year started, just right after Christmas. And we've had Hurricane Katrina. We've had, you know, two hurricanes, the mudslides in Guatemala. There's just been a lot of natural disasters lately. And then we've got rising fuel prices to deal with. This is especially going to impact those of us that live in the north. We're looking at gas bills going up somewhere between, depending on whose report you believe, somewhere between a third and 70% over what they were last winter. I personally can't afford it if that happens. I really can't. It's no joke. We've been working on trying to get out of debt in our household. We're heading into the winter without the savings necessary to withstand that kind of blow. We just went out today and spent a bunch of money on thermal underwear and heaters and electric blankets and stuff today. We got more to spend in that category because we're going to try to keep our fuel prices down. And then there's wars and rumors of war. We've got the war in Iraq going on, and it's going very badly for the administration. I don't care what the news says today about Sunnis participating in the election for the election for the Constitution. The news over there is still generally very bad, and we are caught in a quagmire. And it was all based on lies. And right now, the administration is saber-rattling again with Syria and with Iran in particular. They really, really want to have a confrontation with Iran. And then we have the avian flu. And this potentially is the most important topic we could talk about today because the ramifications, if the avian flu is indeed a reality, if it could in fact end up in being a problem for us as human beings, go beyond the bird population and move to human beings. Yes, I know there's been some isolated cases of it already. But if it could really reach us, then we could have a plague of catastrophic proportions, and we're being told that there's not enough of the drug available necessary to protect us, to save our lives. But the government's not prepared. Surprise, surprise. And I would say to you that they shouldn't need to be prepared. It's the fact that we rely on governments in these situations that gets us into half the trouble in the first place. We're going to talk about that here on the show today. In fact, I'm kind of curious, are we being prepared for something here? And that something is martial law. The president has made some comments that I find very disconcerting. I want to talk about that here on today's show. I want to talk about how you should respond to it. And I, you know, there's more things to say about the Harriet Myers nomination. I said quite a bit last week, but there is actually more to say. And there's more to say about Bush's big spending ways. There is a tool in his arsenal. There's two tools in his arsenal that he has not used. I'm going to tell you about a tool that Bill Clinton used 163 times to eliminate spending that George W. Bush has not used. It's going to stun you. Folks, I really think this CD, Why Conservative Christians Are Reevaluating George W. Bush, when I produced this CD before the 2004 elections, I was careful, I was cautious, I was even quote-unquote conservative. I tried not to impugn the president's motives. I tried to explain just the facts that were available at the time that proved that he was not a good choice for people as Christians to vote for. But the news that is beginning to unfold before us is proving that the situation was far worse than even I said on that rather conservative CD. And that CD was, I'm telling you, it lambasted him. But I didn't go anywhere near as far as I could have gone, and today we'll talk about a few of those things. Now, should I be down or should I be depressed if this is the case? Am I bent out of shape or scared or worried? I'll be honest with you, no. You see, I know who I trust. I know that God is in control. I understand that He has a plan for my life and the life of my family, and I am not bothered or worried about this. Do I want things to go badly? No. Do I want to take preparations? Yes, that's what I'm supposed to do. That's a prudent thing to do. That's my job as a father and provider for my family. But I'm not worried. I believe all things work together for good to them that love God. That's what I believe. And so today, I'm not all concerned. I'm not all anxious and worried. But I still think we need to talk, and we need to proclaim the truth. And so today on this show, we're going to talk about those things. We're going to talk about the truth of big spending George W. Bush. We're going to talk about the truth about Harriet Meyer's selection to be on the U.S. Supreme Court and what that says about President Bush. And we're going to talk about this potential catastrophe in front of us of a flu and pandemic. And the way the president wants to handle that. And in all three of these areas, George W. Bush comes up with an F. And I'm saying that to you if you're a Christian right now. I'm saying that to you if you're a conservative. Look, liberals already know he gets an F. And for probably the very wrong reasons, they would give him an F. But those of you that believe that government should be limited, those of you that believe in the Constitution, those of you that believe that individuals have a responsibility and families and neighbors and churches and communities have an obligation to look out for each other, not some big distant bureaucracy. George W. Bush doesn't agree with you. He doesn't agree with you. Fundamentally, he disagrees with you. It doesn't matter what lip service he pays. It doesn't matter if Jesus Christ is his favorite philosopher. It doesn't matter if he's made a profession of faith. It matters how he lives. At a certain point, actions begin to matter more than mere words. We've had enough time with this president to see what he's doing, to see how he would perform under pressure, to see how he would handle various crises. It does not match the reality. And by the way, it does not match the nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more that goes on. A lot of people thought he was sending out code. We're going to talk about that today, too, because the Harriet Meyer situation was full of this subtle code that didn't really exist. So I want you to call in 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. Or you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org, and I will give you a free CD if you do. Several days after the Patriot Act was passed, a printed version was made available for Congress to read. Yes, I said several days after the Patriot Act was passed. But that's not unusual. Congress routinely passes bills that has little or no time to read. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I say it's time for a new American revolution with the slogan, No Legislation Without Representation. Congress cannot claim to be representing us when they don't know what's in the bills they pass. They shouldn't take the words of lobbyists. They shouldn't rely on unelected staff. And they shouldn't take orders from the party leadership because, after all, They're supposed to represent you. At DownsizeDC.org, you'll find a bill that should be the law of the land. It's called the Read the Bills Act. You can read it at our website, DownsizeDC.org. Better yet, you can use our simple system to tell your elected representatives to sponsor the Read the Bills Act. Write it down, DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Hour here on this edition of the Culture Repair Show, 1-800-259-9231. If you want to get the CD, Why Conservative Christians Are Reevaluating George Bush, you can get in on a conversation, give me a good question or a topic or your take on something that we've said today on the show, or you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org. You know, we're going to do an GOA update too. I neglected to mention that at the top of the show. We've got some good news to report from Gun Owners of America, and Gun Owners of America is a sponsor of the show, so we take time every week to share some news from Gun Owners of America. And I'm thankful, too, for Genesis Communications for giving me this opportunity to come here every Sunday. I've been doing this for just over 6 months now, and this hour is a lot of fun. I really enjoy being able to come and talk to you and share my perspective on things that are going on in the week. And I like to moan at the end of the show about how I don't have enough time today because I've got more to say. Folks, the truth of the matter is I just like the sound of my own voice. And so thank you, Genesis, for giving me the opportunity to listen to myself talk. Let's talk about Harriet Myers. It's hard to know which one to take first. I mean, this avian flu, obviously, is a really big story, but I've got some thoughts right at the front of my mind right now about Harriet Myers' nomination. You know, the president likes to claim that both Roberts, John Roberts, who's chosen to be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and Harriet Myers, who's now his new appointee to replace Associate Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, are quote-unquote strict constructionists. Well, leaving aside that I don't really know what that word means, because the alternative is that there's somebody that would legislate from the bench. And I've seen conservatives legislate from the bench, and liberals legislate from the bench, and everyone in between. That's happened a whole bunch. So I'm not really sure what this strict constructionist thing is. And if you talk to people who are legal experts, they will tell you that there's lots of different definitions for a strict constructionist. But the president likes to say that. And he even goes further on Harriet Myers. He said, quote, "She shares my philosophy that judges should strictly interpret the laws in the Constitution of the United States and not legislate from the bench." But, you know, here's the truth, folks. There's only two possibilities here. One is that Bush is lying about both himself and Myers. Okay? I mean, he doesn't know what's in the Constitution. We've seen him rampant, incredible violations of this, not of the letter and the spirit of this document, out of this man's mouth and in the proposals that he's made and in the policies that he's advanced. I mean, just on the 9th and 10th Amendment alone, he is a huge sinner. Okay? I mean, he's trashed war power restrictions. He's gone after revered civil and criminal protections. He's included, and that includes habeas corpus and due process. You know, for as much as I like talking, you would think I could do better. This is my, I'm in week two here of my allergy-induced asthma, and so I'm having a little trouble. I'm tripping over my tongue today, and I apologize to you, the listener. So what I was attempting to say is that he has trashed civil and criminal protections, including habeas corpus and due process. That was much better. So one of two things is true. Either he meant to do all those things, and she shares that philosophy, which is really scary, or he didn't realize he was doing those things, and he doesn't really know what Harriet Myers thinks either. Neither one of those is a good alternative. Now, the truth of the matter is, and this is what you really need to understand, is that neither Roberts nor Myers believes that in challenging quote-unquote settled case law. Okay? That means that there's a bad precedent that's been established out there, and a lot of them have, and the problem's been compounded with decision after decision so that it is quote-unquote settled, then the justice in question isn't going to do anything to overturn that. there's greater respect for precedence amongst these quote-unquote strict constructionists than there is for the actual clearly written language of the Constitution. Harry Brown, who's on right before me, and he's on Saturday nights on this network as well, said that if he was president, because he did run for president a couple times, that he had only one question that he wanted to ask, or at least that he wanted to lead with, in interviewing a prospective candidate for the Supreme Court. It was his first and most important question, and that question was, can you read? And if they said yes, then he was going to have them read the First Amendment to him, and then say, what does Congress shall make no law mean? I submit to you folks that both Roberts and Myers have no idea. They see penumbras and exceptions and all kinds of things that aren't in the plain written language. Now for conservatives, the things that should anger them the most is that the president had promised to restore protection for the unborn. Bush claimed on the campaign trail, I will do everything in my power to restrict abortion. And that he would support a constitutional amendment to outlaw abortion. Now these promises are easy to make. First, he doesn't have to do so, he doesn't have anything he can do directly about the problem. So much for his power. His power is negligible in this matter. So he's going to do everything in his power. And a constitutional amendment, well, this is an old conservative ruse. They can get a lot of people to give money and get all up in arms about a constitutional amendment that they know darn well is never going to happen. And this is just the way politicians behave. They know that they can talk out of both sides of their mouth. They know that they can vote for something before they vote against it, as John Kerry did. Stuff goes on all the time. But you know something, folks? The president said that he wouldn't have a litmus test. I don't have a litmus test. Well, okay, he didn't have a litmus test on abortion. But if he says, I'm going to do everything in my power to restrict abortions, could that not be a big hint to his supporters that he's going to appoint someone to the U.S. Supreme Court who is going to do something to restrict abortions? I think he did intentionally telegraph that false hint. He also, at another point, compared anti-abortion activism and two anti-abortion activists compared Roe v. Wade to the Dred Scott decision, which, by the way, was overturned. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more. Which brings me to James Dobson, who was at the center of the news the middle of this past week. James Dobson, I sat and watched the White House press conference on Wednesday. I'm just very curious because the reporters were picking up that there was an attempt by the Bush administration to have it both ways. Scott McClellan, the White House press secretary, was standing up saying, look, the president is only concerned with their qualifications. But at the same time, they wanted people to know that she belonged to a conservative evangelical church, that she had given some money to pro-life causes in the past, and they wanted to get other things out. And these are the things that Dobson wanted to get out. These are the things that Dobson said made him comfortable. These were gigantic hints to the Christian conservative community that it's okay. Trust the president. He's going to do something. He's picked the right person. He just wanted to pick someone without a paper trail to kind of sneak them past the Democrats. And for a group of people who believe in this faith-based presidency, they were all too willing to gobble this up in too many cases. James Dobson, top of the heap in the conservative echelon, the conservative Christian echelon, the biggest talk show host in the country, wanted to believe it. 1-800-259-9231. We'll have more to say about this when we get back from the break.
Larry Pratt's latest book is now available. On the Firing Line, Essays in the Defense of Liberty can be purchased from Gun Owners of America for only $18 plus shipping and handling. On the Firing Line is a collection of essays that GOA's Executive Director Larry Pratt has written over the last few years. They were composed in the battle to defend the right to keep and bear arms, as well as the rest of our liberties protected in the Bill of Rights. Pratt has taken on the arguments used by the enemies of freedom who would disarm harm and subjugate Americans. Pratt shows that the debate transcends firearms because the debate is really about control. Who will control the lives of private citizens? Will it be each person individually, or will it be the government? You can order your copy of On the Firing Line by going to the GOA website at gunowners.org. Or you can call GOA's toll-free number, 1-888-886-GUNS. That's 888-886-GUNS. You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Gets you the opportunity to talk to me, Jim Babcock, on the Culture Repair Show, and an opportunity to get the CD, Why Conservative Christians Are Reevaluating George W. Bush, the surprising insights more and more Christians are having and know they're not deciding to vote Democrat. I produced this CD last year before the elections. It was available for sale at that time, and it still is technically, but won't be much longer. It's going to be going out of sale. We're looking to get the last ones of these out of stock for now and move on. In fact, I'm beginning to feel that the CD is a bit dated with the number of things that the president's been pulling lately. And so I want to encourage you to pick up a copy of this CD for yourself. If you email the show, comments at downsizedc.org, and I use your question on air or your comment on air, or you can improve your odds right now. The phone lines are open at 1-800-259-9231. We'll get your address, and you can participate. And this is only if you get on the show, folks. We had someone call last week who was interested in the CD, but they called and didn't want to come on the show. We're looking for you to actually come on and join me on the show as a guest. They're still available at my website, culturerepair.com. They won't be much longer. In fact, it could be as soon as this week before they're no longer available for sale. That's culturerepair.com. We're practically giving the CDs away. It's $4 for one of them, and a six-pack is $8. So we're practically giving these things away. There's no shipping or tax on top of that. I mean, it's all included in the price just because I wanted to get as many of these out. And we distributed about 600 of these before the November election last year. So if you want to get a copy of it, you can get that, culturerepair.com. And if you want to come on the show and get your copy for free by coming on and offering me a question or comment, we've been talking about Harriet Myers. As we went into the break, we talked about the kind of the nudge-nudge, wink-wink aspect of this, that the Bush administration wants to have it both ways. To the media and to the Democrats, they want them to believe. And folks, there's no other way to call this. This is an attempt to mislead. This is another example of the lack of honesty that this administration engages in. They wanted the media and the Democrats to believe that they're not taking into account her church affiliation or anything else like that, but they want the conservatives, the Christian conservatives, who are anxious about this issue, to know that she's okay. And you can't have it both ways. One of the two is true. One or the other group is going to be disappointed. And I've got news for you, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be the conservative Christians. It's going to be the conservative Christians. The president has surrendered everything. And it has amazed me. I talked about this last week. At this time last year, I ran into a pastor friend of mine who lives just a block away from me and talked to him for a while. And he didn't understand why I wasn't excited about the presidential election campaign. I mean, he didn't expect me to be supporting Kerry, but he thought I was going to be supporting Bush. And as we went through a conversation and we broke things down, I began explaining to him the stuff that was on this CD. And I gave him a copy of the CD. As I explained to him my impressions and beliefs were, and why I believe George Bush was not a good selection for someone who believed in small government, for someone who believed that the Constitution meant what it said, for someone who believed that honesty was a Christian virtue, for someone that believed that war is the health of the state. He retreated on every single issue I addressed with him until finally he said, "But yeah, you don't want John Kerry picking the next Supreme Court justices, do you?" This issue mattered. It mattered a lot. This is the one issue, in my opinion, the one issue. They were allowed to let Bush be a scoundrel on every level. But it's changed, as we talked about at the beginning of last week's show when I had Harry Brown on during the first segment. The tide has turned. Now conservatives all of a sudden are beginning to feel their roots. There's a blog that I read every week, redstate.org. I've had Mike Krompaski, one of the principals of that blog, on this show before. These guys were solid Bush supporters, supported the Bush policies, and now with this Harriet Myers pick, it has tipped the balance. They've just fallen over. They're critical of the Bush administration, and not just about the Harriet Myers nomination, but about all the other ways that he has let them down. It's starting to come out. It's coming out on website after website. I could point so many of them out to you. I'm pleased to see this finally happening, but there are still people who are willing to drink the Kool-Aid, and James Dobson appears to be one of them. And I want to take Dr. Dobson to task. I want to take him to task because I believe it's very important for every Christian to think through this next concept that I'm going to address very, very hard. There needs to be some very concrete thinking on the matter of truth. Is your relationship with Christ, does it give you wisdom? Do you have an eye on the truth? Do you have an insight that other folks do not have because of this relationship you have with Christ? That's a very biblical idea, by the way. Christ claims to be the truth himself. God says he will grant wisdom. There is a dualism in our society, a belief that we're supposed to leave our private beliefs at home or compartmentalize them. We can have them on Sunday when we're in church, but we have a different ethic from Monday through Friday when we're in the workplace. We separate faith from facts. We separate beliefs and values from science and secular knowledge that you need to pursue in your career. Those things become divided. There's a dichotomy between those things. And it is expected. And you know something? I am offended that the Bush administration would suggest, and James Dobson would seem to endorse, the notion that it's okay for the Bush administration to play this game, that Christians are supposed to leave their beliefs at home or leave them at church, that they don't have, that they're not supposed to bring them with them wherever they go. I mean, does Harriet Myers believe, for example, that there should be no other gods before God? Is she opposed to idolatry? Do you think that doesn't matter on the U.S. Supreme Court? I mean, do you really think that someone going to the Supreme Court, that that question isn't going to be posed to them dozens of times over the course of their career in some way, shape, or form? You better believe it will be. Where does she stand on that issue? I don't want someone who's going to leave part of themselves at home. I don't want someone who claims that they've got a relationship with the creator of the universe, pretending that that relationship is irrelevant to their day-to-day existence, to their belief system, their value system. And I don't understand this game where anybody would believe that such a thing could be possible. If she really believes the things that James Dobson wants us to believe she believes, she should bring those things with her. And if the Democrats don't like it, they can vote against her. And, you know, if Harriet Myers is the best the president can do, I mean, there's a bunch of Harriet Myers out there. We could find all kinds of women who've been presidents of bar associations or city council women or whatever. We can keep putting them up all day long. One right after another. Let them keep shooting them down. Maybe even then, George W. Bush would have a legitimate claim about that, or Laura Bush more particularly, about the sexist nature of the Senate. But that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Folks, the president flinched. And it's going to get him in trouble. This nomination, as we head into the break, this nomination is going to get him in trouble. You stay tuned. Mark my words. Remember these names. Ben Barnes, G-Tech, and the Texas Lottery. There's a cover-up scandal going on that potentially here that could come up during the confirmation hearings. It could embarrass the president. $19,000 paid by the Bush gubernatorial campaign to this Dallas lawyer. They're not going to want this stuff out. This is going to make Rathergate look small. Stay tuned. Imagine you're on trial. The charge against you? Violating one of the hundreds of laws Congress passes each year. You rise in your defense and say, "Your Honor, I didn't know about this law." How will the judge respond? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I think you know the answer. The judge will reply, Ignorance of the law is no excuse. So what's the excuse for your representatives in Congress? Their ignorance is even worse. They don't even read many of the laws they pass. At DownsizeDC.org, we're proposing a simple but powerful idea, the Read the Bills Act, to force Congress to read the laws they pass. Why? Because we believe the federal government is way too big. We want to slow the politicians down. We want to reduce the size and power of the federal government, and we want them to sweat the details, just like you do. Check out DownsizeDC.org, because ignorance is no excuse, even for a congressman.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Before we get to the avian flu, we need to do a GOA update. We have good news report. This is a GOA update brought to you by, this show is graciously brought to you by Gun Owners of America, the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington, www.gunowners.org. This was issued just this past Thursday, and I'm going to read it to you word for word. Gun control is on the back burner in Congress, and that is good news. But as has often been said, in order to fully understand the good news, it helps to understand the bad news first. The bad news was this. In early September, gun control was on the fast track in the House. Pressure was mounting to help protect gun makers against frivolous lawsuits, but the prevailing attitude was that they should be helped at any cost, even if it meant swallowing new gun control regulations for the average gun owner. While the Senate passed Senate Bill 397 with two gun control provisions, the House bill H.R. 800 remained free and clear of any gun control. Unfortunately, more than 100 representatives, many of them supposedly pro-gun, were led to believe that the Senate bill would be acceptable. So they signed a pre-written letter to the House leadership asking them to bring up the anti-gun Senate version. By the way, I added that word supposedly. Adding just one gun control amendment allows gun haters to snatch an undue victory from the hands of gun owners who are expending a lot of time and resources to get this bill passed. To make matters worse, Capitol Hill insiders were expecting the bill and its gun control amendments to sail through final passage sometime in September. So GOA alerted you to this threat. We alerted you on this radio show several different weeks, and thousands upon thousands of you took action. The results have been very rewarding. The word now from the House is that the bill is not expected to come up again until next year. Getting this extra time is huge. It allows us to keep on petitioning each representative and continue banging on the House leadership, asking them to drop the gun control provisions from the bill. Your hard work has managed to influence Congress in many ways during the fight to pass legislation, which moves us in the direction of helping gun makers. Earlier this year, when we found out that Senator Dianne Feinstein wanted to add her semi-auto ban renewal as an amendment to the Senate bill, we asked Majority Leader Bill Frist to use parliamentary procedures to block her amendment. At first, Senator Frist was reluctant. He didn't want to be seen as obstructionist. He dragged his feet. His staff even claimed it couldn't be done. But after the Senator received several thousand emails, faxes, and phone calls from GOA members, Frist changed his mind. He used the parliamentary procedure GOA had recommended, a strategy known as treeing the bill, to block Senator Feinstein from offering her semi-auto ban to S-397 in July. It was a tremendous victory. Senator Frist, because of your hard work and encouragement, had accomplished a great pro-gun feat, but then he blinked. Rather than blocking all gun control amendments, he decided to allow some amendments to be voted on. Some amendments failed, others passed, and that's how S-397 got burdened with two gun control amendments. A trigger lock amendment, and an armor-piercing ammunition study. And you can read more about those at the GOA website. Clean legislation is desperately needed, and GOA is asking if you will help remain America's Second Amendment watchdog. Representative Ron Paul of Texas says, "Your membership in gun owners makes a difference on Capitol Hill every single day. I know that GOA will continue to be the no-compromise leader in defending America's gun rights and personal freedoms. And I, as your host, would recommend that you check out and join Gun Owners of America at www.gunowners.org. Well, we've learned that the governors themselves are ready to shun Bush's emergency powers. WorldNetDaily.com reports the major objection to Bush's plan appears to be a reluctance by the governors to turn over state authority to the federal government. Most governors would resist federal intrusion even in response to an event the size and scope of Hurricane Katrina, which has so far resulted in 1,100 deaths. Whether a governor is Republican or Democrat, I would expect the response would be, hell no, Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm, a Democrat, said in her response. Governor Haley Barbour of Mississippi, a former head of the Republican National Committee, whose state was impacted by Katrina, also distanced himself from Washington. His spokesman, Pete Smith, told USA Today that although his boss's position was that some federal help may be appropriate and necessary, we don't need them coming in and running things. Now, folks, like, I begin to wonder if we're being set up here with this avian flu. Listen to this question that the president got during a Rose Garden press conference, and notice the reporter putting words in his mouth. Mr. President, you've been thinking a lot about pandemic flu and the risks in the United States if that should occur, and that is one of the reasons you're interested in the idea of using defense assets to respond to something as broad and long-lasting as flu might be? Bush said, yes, thank you for your question. The policy decisions for a president in dealing with avian flu outbreak are difficult. If we had an outbreak somewhere in the United States, do we not then quarantine that part of the country? And how do you then enforce a quarantine? He then went on to point to an obvious conclusion that only the military could do this, which would be a violation of the Posse Comitatus Act, which means that the military can't play the role of police officers. And we don't want that to happen. As we were able to see in New Orleans, mass enforcement of any edict has terrible consequences. A guy named Michael Shudovsky reports, according to the Wall Street Journal on October 1, 2005, the Bush administration plans to ask Congress an estimated $6 to $10 billion to stockpile vaccines and antiviral medications as part of its plans to prepare the U.S. for a possible flu pandemic. But the interesting thing was that almost all of this money went to the Pentagon. It didn't go to any of the health agencies within the federal government. Joel Skousen says, as a former Marine Corps officer, I can tell you about the caliber of troops in the military varies from very good to very unstable, including chronic bad judgment on drugs, alcohol, low test scores, and personal moral behavior. And he goes on to point out that with the shortage of troops, they're lowering the standards even more, kind of taking the marginal cases and recruiting them anyway. And there's been cases of people being accidentally shot in Iraq. Do we want that here? Stay tuned. A congressman recently revealed that legislation totaling 2,900 pages and involving more than $1 trillion was available to members of Congress for less than 48 hours to study and consider. That's over 60 pages of legislation per hour. Do you think anyone read the entire bill? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Consider a proposal buried in a 3,200-page, $388 billion bill, which would have empowered committee chairmen or their agents to examine Americans' tax returns. When this horrible provision came to light, no one claimed to know how it got into the bill. One congressman questioned said, I didn't write it, I didn't approve it, I wasn't even consulted. If your attorney represented you this way, he might be disbarred. But this is how Congress represents you every day. That's why DownsizeDC.org has created the Read the Bills Act. You can force Congress to read their bills before they pass them at DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
My understanding, from according to Dr. Bill Sardi, is that elderberry syrup, massive doses of vitamin C and E, plus some selenium, and I'm not sure specifically how much, will help protect you from any flu. They will help build up the sufficient immunity to help save your life if this flu epidemic comes along. It's the best thing that we're aware of, because the Tamiflu, which is supposedly the cure, there just isn't enough, and you know the government's going to give it to themselves first before they allow us, the citizens, to have them. First the men with guns get it, and then you. First the powerful and connected get it, and then the poor. And so we have to understand there's a pecking order here, and there's not enough of it. It's made Tamiflu is made by the Roche company, and they're making them in Switzerland, and they just cannot make them fast enough. And India has already said they're going to break the patents and make their own version of it. Taiwan is hinting at the same thing. And there are proposals for making a generic version here, and it's even that idea is even being advanced by some conservatives. Tyler Cowen, a economist, has a different idea. He said that we ought to offer incentives, an incentive prize to Roche to speed up the production of facilities here and waive the regulatory requirements. That would get the drugs to market faster. Well, here's the dirty little secret. People die every year because we don't get the drugs to market fast enough because we have these bureaucracies, particularly the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, that makes it take 7 to 10 and sometimes 12 years before drugs get to market, life-saving medications. And then I compound that, we have OSHA, and we have other types of EPA requirements that these companies would have to meet. These requirements keep them from getting the product to market fast enough in a way that could save lives. These things are supposed to improve the quality of our lives, actually end up killing us. Government kills, folks. So I want to take the proposal a little further. Let's close the FDA completely and see how fast Roche builds a plant here with Tamiflu and sells it to us. They can make big profit doing it. And it would have happened already if it weren't for the regulation. But I'm concerned that the president has lurched towards martial law as the only way to solve it. He wants to quarantine entire cities, and he wants to use the military to do it. And you should be concerned about it, too. How many of you have heard of rescission, impoundment, and veto? These are not in W's lexicon. Not only has Mr. Bush failed to veto any legislation, this is from Jim Cooper in the Financial Times, he has not rescinded any outlays. This lesser-known power has been around since Richard Nixon. Bill Clinton sought to rescind 163 spending items totaling $6.6 billion and won 111 of them from a divided Congress, saving $3.6 billion. Mr. Bush's father tried to rescind 169 items, winning 34, saving $2.3 billion. George W. Bush is afraid of harming support for the war in Iraq. That's the theory that Jim Cooper has. And this is another reason that war is the health of the state and the death of you. In order to keep the war going, he's unwilling to be fiscally responsible. Record-setting deficits, this is a problem. Folks, we need to downsize D.C. Check out downsizedc.org, that's my day job, and visit culturerepair.com because my George Bush CDs will not be available much longer. Have a great weekend.